very amusing. Your one-stop shop for the stories, secrets, and shenanigans of a popcorn-fueled theme park journalist. I'm Carly Wiesel, and I have been bankrupted by that Zara collaboration. I'm sure by now you all know what I'm talking about. I think the dude who did it, Harry Lambert, who did this collaboration with Zara and Disney, all three of them together, all in a pile, I think Harry is Harry Styles' stylist from what I understand, but this collection was so good. It dropped last week, and I bought so much. Now, you know I don't buy a lot of stuff. I'm not often, like, consuming clothes. I try stuff on, I decide, I send it back. I don't keep everything. And here, there's so many things that I fell in love with genuinely where I'm like, oh, this is going to be part of my wardrobe for the next 10 years minimum. I'm still figuring out like exactly which, there's like a few things I ordered different sizes of that I'm very in the middle of, because some of them are like, I ordered some men's stuff, I ordered some kids stuff for me, I ordered some women's stuff. It is all over the place, but I am like rich in Disney sweater vests and big sweaters and tops right now, and I am so excited about it, because there's only really been, to me, there's been like two or three gigantic, iconic Disney collabs. Years ago, maybe like 2016, there was a Lazy Oaf Disney collab, and every girly out in the parks had that black, oh, the black Mickey Mouse overall. Why has nobody redone that? Those were so in, and they were so rad. I got rid of mine a couple years ago. I'm like, maybe it's still in my house. Maybe I was smart and I put it in a box being like, you might want this one day, because it was perfect with the turtleneck and a fall day in the parks. But that was like an iconic collab moment. There was also one other one I'm blanking on, but there's only been a few of these where it's like, oh, they're doing a Disney collection and it's so rad. Oh, opening ceremony. Duh. That one was so good. And while the price point was completely out of reach, completely, I was lucky enough to go to the opening ceremony fashion show, which was held in Toontown, probably like 2017. That was one of the greatest nights of my life. It was so cool. I wasn't always invited to that stuff, but I was on assignment and I was reporting a story, and I got to truly see a Disney-themed fashion show at Disneyland, which, even saying out loud, is wild. I still have like all of like the brochure and like everything from that night, but I never was able to buy anything from the collection because it was just so pricey. Until opening ceremony shuttered their entire business. They closed everything. I used to love going there. It was my favorite store in New York. I would just browse and touch things, and I couldn't be inspired. I couldn't really buy anything there. But when they had this big closing sale, I waited outside in line. Must have been an hour minimum. I was like waiting outside. I think I was second or third in line. And I was like, I have to get a piece from that collection. And they had the dream item I was waiting for, which is this like plush, velvety Mickey Mouse print mini skirt, which was my size by some miracle. It was the only one they had. And it has been one of my favorite items forever, ever since. I've had it for about 4 or 5 years now. I've worn it to Disneyland Paris in the winter. I've worn it on Disney Cruise Line. It's just one of those things. And I feel like this Zara collab is one of those things. So if you haven't checked it out, you should check it out if you are at all interested. But that's neither here nor there. I just needed to get that off my chest. I need to talk to you about the Zara stuff because I haven't talked about it yet. It's so, so good. But this week, we are talking about Disney's domestic theme parks. Oh, yeah. They are going into the Thunderdome, and we are going to battle it out to find out which one of them is the best and, iconically, which one of them is the worst. Stick around. We have so much fun ahead, and I cannot wait to share this episode with you. See you on the other side.
Carly, we're back.
I love it. You're like a little fairy that floats in and is like, would you like to save money on your vacation?
And of course, the answer is yes. They're just hitting us one after another after another. And during some of these peak times where people usually travel, like around the holidays, because of course, we know how magical it is to be at any Disney property or on any Disney cruise when it is decorated for the holidays. There are three right off the bat that I need to tell you about. And one of them we've already known, which which is DCL, and this incredible 50% off the third and fourth guests on select sailings. I have not seen an offer like that probably in 10 or 12 years. So if you can go, it's the time to grab it. So this is valid on the Magic, Wonder, Dream, Fantasy, and Wish for select sailings between October 3rd and March 30th of 2026. That has to be booked by October 12th to be valid, unless they push it out, but we're just not sure. But I have a feeling that they're going to put an end to that one on October 12th because it is such a great deal.
Becky, that's incredible.
That's just one. That is just one. So we have Disney World is totally focused on their holidays as well. So you can still save up to 20% if you go from October 12th to November 20th or November 23rd to December 25th. So right at the tail end of Halloween, and then you've got that magical turnover where one day it's Halloween and the next day it's Christmas. It's right during that time period. And they're still giving the promo card away too for those packages. So $100 for deluxe or the villa resort, $75 for a moderate resort, or $50 for a value resort.
It's like you book a trip and you get your own holiday gift.
Yeah, exactly. But Disneyland still has their 20% off for travel for select dates through December 20th. So again, if you want to experience the holidays around Disneyland, just book by 12/16. Travel by December 20th, and you can save 20%.
I can't believe we have holiday discounts. Experiencing these parks and not sweating through my clothes is always a gift. Thank you so much. I can't wait for your next discount drop at the end of the episode because you have some real good stuff coming for Alani and ABD.
Yeah, there's some new stuff for sure. See you in a minute.
Welcome back to our wacky little Disney Parks ranking episode. And I really just want to be straightforward with all of you. I just went to record this and I heard the most terrifying noise I've ever heard in the 5+ years of recording this podcast. And that is that I just recorded a regular audio file. And when I hit play, it sounded like... And if you know the backstory of how this episode came together, you know that that feels like a dark cloud over me. It feels like a bad omen. And I'm pretty sure we're going to get through okay, but I just need to warn you, in case anything does go awry, there is some sort of spirit that knows what I'm about to say about Disney's Hollywood Studios and is coming for me. Is it like every animatronic that was in the Great Movie Ride is descending on me, waiting to hear what I have to say so they can just automatically poof, delete my audio file? I don't know. But let me set the scene for you, because this was not the episode we had scheduled for this week. I am recording this Saturday evening. It is quite late. I leave in the morning to fly to Orlando for a trip I'm going to tell you all about next week that I'm very excited for. But I foolishly chose to have the episode that came out today be a full-blown Disneyland guide. We're talking fact-checked, we're talking fancy, we're talking like top to bottom, everything you got to know about visiting Disneyland Resort, updating our guides, clearing them out, making sure they were nice and accurate and succinct and edited. And, well, I maybe shouldn't have chosen the week I had no childcare to do that, because Friday night, when it was real late, I realized, oh, there's no way I'm going to be able to finish this in time to the level of execution that I'm hoping for. So I posted on Instagram Friday night. I think I called it an AMA/save me from myself, something like that. And people sent in the most brilliant ideas for what a different podcast episode could be. I basically was like, I need to switch gears. This guide is getting pushed a few weeks, so I have time to finalize it. What should I do this week instead? I ended up like working on this for about 5 hours. So I only had a few hours to get everything done. And the ideas that came in were so excellent. But the top idea was from Bailey, which is what we are doing this week. Thank you, Bailey. And thank you to everyone who wrote in. I'm honestly going to save so many of those for the future. I'm actually really grateful for this. Like, I'm being pretty... Also, if you hear that creaky, I'm sitting so silly in my chair right now. I'm fully like, you know, the Selena Gomez meme of her looking very like wrapped up in a blanket. That is me right now. I am wrapped in a blanket and I'm perched on my chair, and my chair makes a little creaky noise. So I apologize. Or maybe that is just one of the ghosts moving through the wall from the Great Movie Ride. I don't know. But I'm choosing to be positive about running out of time doing the Disneyland guide because I'm so grateful for what came out of it. This is an episode I never really had in the list of ideas I had. Like, this isn't something I thought of. The hotel ranking episode is also something that just popped up randomly, and these are so fun. And I do think that going forward, I need to prioritize a little more fun. I have an email in my inbox that's always like, if it's not fun, what's the point? I have worker bee brain. I have that type of mentality. And I often don't, even though my job is theme parks, yes, I don't always choose the most fun route. I choose like the hard work route. And this is straight up fun. And I cannot wait to share it with you. Now, we are going to rank all six domestic Disney parks today. We're talking Disneyland, Disney California Adventure, and the four parks at Walt Disney World. I've broken it down into three categories: food, rides, and vibes. And rides will not totally include attractions and shows simply because rides and vibes rhymed and I wanted to keep it that way, okay? That's just how we're doing it. I also originally was like, should we have a bonus tiebreaker category? But I don't think we're going to need it because I think the ranking is emerging as quite clear. For each of these categories, food, rides, and vibes, see, it does rhyme. That's why we're not doing shows. Everything will be ranked out of 5 points. So the top score is 15 points. If you have 15 points, you're probably winning or tying for the top billed best Disney park in America. And we are just sticking with those six, nothing international for this one, even though it already has been requested. I love you guys. Like, this episode hasn't even come out and people are like, rank them all, which honestly, I want to. This is so much fun. We should be doing this all the time. What if this is just a ranking podcast? It might be soon because it's really such a joy. All six of these parks are starting out on completely equal footing, even though Disney themselves don't view them as equal. They're all priced differently in Florida all the time. Like, I think from a rudimentary search of where things are going the rest of this year, I think Disney's Animal Kingdom is always the cheapest, even on days Magic Kingdom is only open till 6. I've said for probably a decade now that if the park's only open till 6, they should charge you less money. Like, across the board for any park, that's what it should be. But, you know, it's fine. Their algorithm does whatever their algorithm does. And their only ranking that matters is the one that we're doing here today. Also, sidebar, $184 American dollars to go to Disney's Hollywood Studios for one day on a Saturday is the kind of girl math that keeps me renewing an annual pass year after year after year. When you spend money on an annual pass, it only hurts once. It's only painful for one credit card bill, and it hurts a lot. You can do monthly installments for certain things. I want to rip that Band-Aid off. I want to feel real bad. I feel real bad when I'm paying for it. Feel real bad when the charge comes in. Feel really, I'm talking really bad. It is a hit. It is not great. But after that, it's free until it starts feeling like the walls are closing in and the renewal period is open, which is me very, very soon. But that's how I like my facts and figures, blurry and without any sort of addition. We are going to go category by category. I almost said scattergory by scattergory. I don't even know what that game is. It just popped in my head. We're going to go category by category, park by park, and in the end determine which is the top, the best Disney park in America. And honestly, what I'm looking forward to most is which is the worst. So let's get started. We begin with food, and we are starting California to Florida for all of these categories, beginning with Disney California Adventure. And my first instinct was this should obviously be a 5. But then I thought about it. Is it that great? I mean, there are a handful of places I never really want to eat at. But then again, they do have food festivals with legit offerings, like really, really great stuff. And I am such a fan of Lunar New Year that I gotta give it a little boost because of it. They also have so many quick service yummies. But on the other hand, in preparing for the Disneyland guide episode, there are some upsetting changes that I have discovered at Lamplight Lounge and ones that I am dreading telling you about. Also, you can't get lobster nachos at Lamplight Lounge anymore, only at the upstairs, terribly named boardwalk dining location. Like, just give the people what they want. There is stuff for me to be frustrated about here. And when it comes to seasonal food, is some of the seasonal food better at Disneyland? Then again, the seasonal food throughout the resort is so good, so I do have to hand it to them. At the end of the day, there is always something delicious that you can find here, and Carthay Circle's drinks are impeccable. And the fact that DCA will always provide you a tasty snack, a tasty meal, and a tasty drink, even a tasty seasonal coffee, I think for that, I gotta give it a 4. Now, across the way at Disneyland, if we're gonna talk about Disneyland food, you can legitimately come to Disneyland and do a food tour within a single theme park. And for that, I have to give it top billing. You can have a full one-woman food festival at Disneyland any day of the year. Does Disneyland have iconic snacks? All of them. All of them. Hand-dipped churros. Dole Whip. All of it. Does it have actual good sit-down meals? Sure does. Am I still furious that they got rid of the pommes frites at Cafe Orleans and they flopped in this pathetic replacement that they think will pass but doesn't even compare? Yeah, I'm still really, really mad about it. But my emotional baggage from them changing French fries, which when you say it like that doesn't sound important, but I promise you it is just proof of how iconic a Disneyland dish really can be. And the best part is there's always a great new one around the corner. Every season they have a banger and they do not drop the ball. It has really everything you can want all in one place. The best snacks of any Disney park, period. So many different dining options. I really can't say enough good things. Fives all around. We board a plane and travel over to the Magic Kingdom. Where things start to get a little depressing. When the highlight of the day is a Mickey bar, you know you're in trouble. And I know some people are Magic Kingdom food truthers. Oh, cheeseburger egg roll. Ooh, Sleepy Hollow waffles. Ooh, ice cream cones. But when the majority of the best food here is derivative from Six Flags' menu of hot dogs, frozen treats, and pretzels, you're kind of starting out in the basement. Or dare I say it, the utilidor of cuisine. They do have decent sit-down food, sort of, but like, do I go out of my way to eat at Magic Kingdom? Never! And Crystal Palace does have some yummies, but like, not enough to impact the overall spread of their ranking. So unfortunately, Magic Kingdom is coming in dead last. There is stuff to eat, but to me, it just pales in comparison to other parks' offerings. There is a case to be made for giving it a 1. And also, there is a case to be made for giving it a 3. Oh, be our guest. Oh, they have the snuggies. Oh. But while I am leaning towards the bottom, they added Werther's Caramel Popcorn here, and they did not remove it. It is still there. You can get it without going to Epcot. And so for that, I'm going in the middle, and I'm giving it a 2. The next park up, you know how this is going to go. Food at Epcot? Now, Disneyland did get a 5, so I think we know where this is headed. Because Epcot is essentially a waterfront food court. And during certain times of the year, it's essentially a food court within a food court. This is a theme park for food. There's never a shortage of new things to try, even new to you options, things that may have been there forever and you've just never gotten around to it because there is so much food. As I'm saying this out loud, this is obviously going to be a 5. There's that much food where there, I'm someone who's been going to Epcot for a long time. And I'm sure many of you listening have too, even though there are a few people who listen to this podcast and don't go to theme parks. Julia, I know you're listening and I love you and you are such a good friend for listening, even though you do not ever go to Disney World. My girl Julia, I appreciate her so much. But the fact that you can go to Epcot every year for a decade, for 20 years, and there will always be a restaurant or a dish that you have not yet tried, just solidifies how important this park is when it comes to food. Think about it. They've got a Werther's Caramel store. They've got a place known for fish and chips. They've got multiple ice cream and frozen treat options. They've got 2 competing versions of sweet popcorn. They've got a garden straight up growing food. And they've even got a little walk-up soda bar where everything is free. I would be sick in the head to give it anything but a 5. If we were able to go above 5, I would do it. That is how good the food is at Epcot. But then we get on the Skyliner, we head over to Disney's Hollywood Studios. And here's the thing. The food here is bad. Okay, the food is bad, and let me back myself up. If you are hungry before Fantasmic, hope you like starving, okay? You're going to be eating a pretzel or you're going to be eating nothing. And it's hurting me. It is hurting me to give this park the grade I'm going to give it. But it gets a 3. I know everybody is revolting. I know the ghosts are banging on the doors in my house for the great movie ride. But here's the deal. We are living this place. If it was up to me, I would give it a 1.5 for food. Okay. A carrot cake cookie cannot carry it that far. Like anything, if you walk in the park and you turn right, your food options are, that's literally, if you, unless you go to Joffrey's, if you go straight to Joffrey's, ooh, get a shaky Jamaican, as Molly calls it, ooh, then you're fine. But otherwise, if you turn right, you're not eating anything good, and I stand behind that. But while I often dread eating here, they do have the Dollar Cheese Cup, though. They do have the Dollar Cheese Cup at Backlot Express. While I dread eating here, we are living in a time of Marriott aesthetics, okay? Things feel a little clean like a hospital and shouldn't. And here at Disney's Hollywood Studios, in their defense, they have two of the best themed restaurants Disney operates. Three, if you count the Brown Derby, even though that's themed after like an actual restaurant, so it's on the line. Sci-Fi Dine-In and 50s Primetime are the most themed you can get. Now that they gutted my boy, Beaches and Cream, now that I had to see that plane crash in real life, okay? What they did to that, I can't even get into it. That's going to be a whole other podcast. Anyway, we have to hold on to these restaurants and praise them until they pry them from our bony fingers. Even if the food and Sci-Fi Dine-In is not that great, I'm sorry. It's just a burger. It's fine. It's whatever. And you're eating it like over the shoulder of a stranger and it's very dark in there. Do I love the concept? Do I never want them to take it away? Will I riot if they do? Of course. But like while the environment you eat in is great, I don't love the food. I don't want a pot roast or a meatloaf in the middle of a state that I sweat through my clothes continuously in, okay? So while I don't really feel good about it, I am giving them a 3. But over at Disney's Animal Kingdom, things are a little dicier. I mean, you really have a lot of scattered different options. There are a lot of different things you can eat at this park, but there's no iconic food. Think about it. And I'm going to get yelled at. I'm going to get a churros call about that for sure. But like, there's no iconic food here. And you could say, the tuna nachos or whatever. Or like, Rainforest Cafe. Or like, Flame Tree Barbecue. No, there is no iconic food served at Disney's Animal Kingdom. And while the Satouli Canteen bowls do rock, and I do often eat there, and Nomad Lounge is so great, it just feels like the food program here could have something a little shinier, a little newer. And Tiffin's is wonderful. Tiffin's is revolutionary that they put that in that park. Like, that is an aggressive foodie restaurant, and I love them for that. But there's no snack or quick service that is drawing me into the park for being special, new, unique. And it is a bit strange considering that this is a park that is rooted in different cultures and cuisines. It is very, very easy to lean into the street food aesthetic here, and they haven't done it. And now that I say that, I'm mad. They should be doing that. Why aren't they doing that? I mean, Harambe Market used to have so much good food, and that is long gone. And even with the superior Starbucks, I'm not going to ding them for the paper straws. We want to keep the animals healthy. We don't want plastic in the park. At the end of the day, the food, while there are things that I love to eat here, it's not as remarkable as it should be. So I am inclined to give it a 3, but because of Tiffin's and because Tiffin's has remained pretty great and Nomad Lounge is pretty great and there are great things on that menu, I'm going to give Disney's Animal Kingdom a 3.5. Does anybody hear that? It's a dozen of those terrifying dancers from the great movie Ride banging down my window. Anyway, we are moving on to rides. Two rides, and we are jumping back to California to start with DCA. And I'm going to say something controversial here. I very rarely, and I'm being honest with myself, I'm being truthful, I very rarely go into DCA looking forward to any of these rides. And I know, this is me having such local prejudice. I know. But truthfully, if I'm just coming for the day, I'm not out here looking forward to a Soarin'. Even if the scenery rocks, I'm not going on Grizzly River Run. I have not been on that since I moved to LA over a decade ago. Web Slingers, I've done it enough. I really don't need to go on it for a number of years. So I'm going to try to take my own personal perspective out of it. And remember that we really do have some banger rides here. Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, one of Disney's all-time best thrill rides. Luigi's Rockin' Roadsters, an absolute wild card and something you can't miss on your first or thousandth trip to Disneyland. Silly Symphony Swings, just as for Disney's only living swing ride. There is so much fun to be had and a lot of stuff that can only be experienced here. For a casual guest, getting hits from Epcot and Hollywood Studios by way of like Toy Story Mania and Soarin' and even Little Mermaid from Magic Kingdom, like getting a little taste of Disney World in one location is pretty cool. But then when you really start thinking, when you dig a little below the surface, when you're not just wowed by the mechanisms of a drop ride, you start to realize Incredicoaster is just a retheme of an old ride, as is Emotional Whirlwind. As is The Carousel, as is Guardians of the Galaxy, as is, and so on, and so on, and so on. Even Mike and Sully, the Monsters, Inc. ride that they are getting rid of, even that is a retheme of an old ride. And while I'm pro-recycling, okay, save the earth, save the earth. We deserve fresh, family-friendly rides here and new, and I'm talking capital N, new thrill rides. And we are finally getting them. The much-delayed expansion of Avengers Campus will bring two thrill rides, which is going to be a massive impact on this park. And we're also getting a Coco attraction and an Avatar attraction. And DCA's score will skyrocket when we get that. We're getting thrills and we're getting family-friendly. We are having it all. But we're not there yet. So for now, even with some stuff that I do quite like here, we're going to do a 2.5. Take a few steps over to Disneyland, though, and it's a completely different story. This park has basically everything you would ever want. Thrill rides, baby rides, calm rides, high-octane rides. The only thing it's really missing is a full sit-down show. And even though we're talking rides, I am inclined to knock a little bit off for that. But truthfully, when I think about it, Disneyland's missing nothing. There is such a high concentration of rides that even if you go on a bunch of little Fantasyland rides, you are still getting so much done. So much more than you can get done at probably any other park. And there is something to be said about doing a gaggle of D-ticket rides, just really doing as much as you can in a day and feeling accomplished by doing so much so easily. At the end of the day, anyone can have a perfect theme park day at Disneyland, no matter what you are looking for. Everyone is going to leave satisfied. And you add in ride overlays that truly improve the ride. They don't just change a soundtrack. They don't just make it a little scary. No, they're fully retheming these rides into completely different attractions. And dare I say, they're better for it. Having seasonality to Haunted Mansion and It's a Small World is a good thing, and no other sort of overlay or retheme has ever come close to being better than these. So for that, Disneyland attractions, there's nothing missing. They hit all the marks. It's getting a 5. Over in Florida, we're talking about Magic Kingdom first, and here we got classics. Classiques. We clown on Magic Kingdom a lot as regular park goers because, like, it's busy and it's crowded and it's touristy and it gets pretty intense. But, like, then again, would you put your life on the line for the Tomorrowland Transit Authority People Mover? You sure would! They're also continuing this kind of trend of honoring and updating older rides for the next generation, which I think they're doing a killer job of. Updating Country Bears to breathe new life into it? Awesome. Breathing new life into Carousel of Progress by adding Walt to it? Awesome. They're really trying to find a way at Disney parks and also here to make sure that we retain those classic rides that we would revolt over them getting rid of while still modernizing them in a way where younger guests and newer to Disney guests might be more inclined to go on them. And I can't fully comment on them, I'm just going to say it, on them paving paradise to put up a parking lot by way of Rivers of America, but I do have so much faith that it will be worth it. It has to be worth it. Disney knows how passionate we are, and to fill in Rivers of America, it has to be worth it. I have faith. I have faith. So I will put a pin in that, scoot it over to a bulletin board, and leave it out of the equation. But the only thing this park is really missing is a bona fide thrill ride, which is what I'd say if they didn't fully have three roller coasters, one of which is essentially brand new. So Magic Kingdom, it's getting a 5 for rides. I didn't think it would, but the blend, the strata of everything they have going on there, they've earned it. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more theme park rankings. Welcome back. We are talking Epcot. We are fresh off Magic Kingdom, getting a 5 out of 5. Honestly, a little shocked, but yeah, new coasters, old rides, new rides, they kind of got it all. I gotta hand it to them. They could use, like, I'm telling you, if they put the Tokyo Beauty and the Beast ride into Magic Kingdom, that park would be unmatched. But for now, are there like any of those Tokyo Fantasyland rides, like, or the ones at Tokyo Disney Sea and Fantasy Springs? Like, there's so much potential there. If they put any of those, whoo, baby, it would be great. But we're not talking about that anymore. We already gave it a 5. It can't get any more points. We are talking about Epcot. And there are so many family-friendly rides here, like hiding in plain sight. There is a plethora of boats that you can sit in this park. There are more boats than you, like, you start counting them and you're like, that's kind of a lot of boats. There's just like a lot of things that you can do for all ages. You can easily board that aren't too scary or aren't too thrilling, but are still a great time. And before Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind, I'd say that, you know, the options were a little bit dated. But between that, them updating Test Track, and having a real high concentration of newer rides at Disney World, I just feel like Epcot is kind of firing on all cylinders right now. But even with all of that, when I think about Epcot compared to something like Disneyland, compared to something like Magic Kingdom, it still feels like it's missing a little something. It needs one more thing. It needs like one solid B-ticket ride. It's just not quite on the level of something like Disneyland, where it has absolutely something for everyone and multiple rides in each of the categories. The rides are great. I just feel like we need a tiny bit more. Because at the end of the day, you can do multiple attractions here. You can do Living with the Land. You can do The Seas with Nemo and Friends. You can do, what else should we toss in? A Frozen. We'll toss in a Frozen in there. And that's three rides. Those are like three rides. And it just doesn't add up the same to doing three rides at a different park. I think it just needs a pinch more. And until we get that, I'm going to give Epcot a 4. Walking over to Disney's Hollywood Studios on that path where it's always too hot to be walking on it, and yet all of us do it anyway. If I was submitting this, realistically, if I was submitting this as a magazine story, I would probably be like waxing poetic about, oh, how it has the largest concentration of thrill-like rides, and oh, it has two intense-style coasters, one with an inversion, and oh, Tower of Terror, and oh, it puts trackless ride vehicles on display in multiple views, yada, yada, yada. But I'm not writing a magazine story. I'm speaking directly to the people. And I come here, I walk in that front gate, and I am looking forward to riding nothing, okay? I'm looking forward to riding nothing. And I have had the privilege of going on Rise of the Resistance many, many times. It is, to say that as a sentence, I am blessed. I understand. And I preface all of this by saying that. I have been on these rides often because I go to these parks a lot. But like, I'm not flying to Florida for anything inside this park. I'm sorry. I've gotten to the point where I'm like looking forward to Star Tours because everything else, I've been on a bunch and it's not really doing it for me. Even Tower of Terror has really lost its luster for me, not just because the version they did at DCA, which I did just hold against them for having just rethemed rides, because that one is, it hits so much harder. But like, let's talk about it. When the most popular thing coming out of a ride right now is a meme that people are making with their PhotoPass photos, we're cooked. Like, it's just not the same. Also, we've somehow brought every single old show back into the zeitgeist except for Twilight Zone. They had Jordan Peele. They had Jordan Peele doing Twilight Zone and it still could not break through to mass culture. Nobody cares about it. I mean, I'm sure a few people care about the Jordan Peele show. Nobody cares about Twilight Zone. It's not important in the general culture anymore. I'm sorry. I know there's probably a Twilight Zone fan out there, but it's just a Disney ride in 2025 with that being the theme still. Nah. And Rock and Roller Coaster? I'm not going on that ride until it's Muppetsified. I mean, maybe I'll say goodbye once, but like, that's not a top priority for me either. And I like Slinky Dog a lot. It's so fun whenever I go on it, but the wait is crushing. It is soul crushing. And why is it always 110 degrees over there? Why is it hotter than anywhere else in Disney World waiting in line and being on that ride? Like something about being on that roller coaster, I'm like trying to have fun, but I'm like, my skin is burning. Pulling in at the end, seeing Wheezy, it's like I've never been hotter in my life. So for all of that, Hollywood Studios is getting a 3.5. They would deserve a 4, maybe a 4.5 for having so many thrill rides and having trackless rides and all the magazine things that, oh, I would professionally evaluate it as having. But there's like nothing a young kid can do here. And as a mother, we can't have a Disney park where there's like nothing for a kid to ride. Like they can go on certain things, but it's really not that many. And for that, they're getting a 3.5. Last but not least, Disney's Animal Kingdom. You know, on one hand, it is quite limited on family-friendly slow little rides. It's really kind of only Navi River Journey. That's like kind of it. That's not enough. And on the other hand, it's got a lot of really good thrill rides. Like you can go to Disney World and you can go on coasters through space. You can go on coasters through mountains. Like that's not revolutionary. But going on one through Everest and in adjacently themed land, there is nothing like it and never will be again. I do think the Encanto expansion will be great for families and probably pull a lot more of them in here more often on their Disney vacations. But even with the safari, which, oh my gosh, the safari, even with that, they're kind of lacking in a numbers game. There are really only a handful of rides here. And while they do have great shows, fantastic shows, if you're bringing a kid who's like 3 and under, they can't do much here. But also, they have 3 different kinds of thrill rides, which we have to praise them for. 4, even if you count Kali River Rapids, you have 4, which is pretty cool. If they had like 2 more rides of any type, they would be bustling. But again, they're just not meeting the numbers, in my opinion. Now knowing how challenging it is for families with young kids who don't just want to sit down and see shows all day, as good as the thrill rides are, they are being pulled down by the fact that there isn't enough other type of rides. Even though Safari is great, even though Everest is fantastic, even though, for that, I have to give them a 3.5. Sigourney Weaver is now at my window and she's very conflicted between how I feel about Animal Kingdom's rides and how I feel about Disney's Hollywood Studios. I don't know where it's going to net out. I hope she like comes in and hangs out and we can have some cold brew, but she might be coming in screaming at me. I don't know which way it's going to go. I also don't know how this stupid bit started, but here we are. I'm recording this very late at night and you are on this journey, this Navi River journey along with me. Now we have talked food, we have talked rides, and now it is time for what I think is actually the most important category, the one that can swing it any way for any of these parks, and that is vibes. Vibes! Let's talk about vibes. Vibes is that je ne sais quoi that makes a Disney park so special, or a lack thereof, one of which I'm thinking of in particular. But we're hopping back to California, and we are starting again with Disney California Adventure. And I'm about to say some stuff in the back part of this podcast where I hope anybody who wanted to cancel me stopped listening by now, got distracted, got out of their car. I don't know, but from here on out, it's basically like jumping off a diving board into the deep end. So, DCA, let's talk about it. You know how when you see a video made with AI, it kind of gives you that tummy ache where on a visceral level, you're like, something's not right here. I love going to DCA, But I definitely get that feeling when I'm here. I have popped off online about how I am convinced a name change is coming to this park. But California Adventure has that Disney's Hollywood Studios syndrome of like mishmashing a bunch of random experiences under the guise of, see, California. We can cut the well-oiled Imagineering backstory for many of these locations, which, by the way, they do a good job kind of threading that needle, I gotta say. Praise them. But simply put, a streetcar, Spider-Man, and Route 66 should not be in the same park unless it's a multiverse. And by all accounts, it's completely fine. It's fine that they're all here. But we are judging and we are ranking based on vibe. And the vibe is kind of bad. It's not horrible. It's just disjointed. I think the Pixar Pier retheme does work. Honestly, I do. But I don't know. DCA kind of feels like when you go to a coworker's wedding, but you don't want to spend $300 on a new dress. You just do the best you can with what you got. And they have. DCA has. They've pulled a skirt and a top together out of their proverbial Imagineering closet, and they have made magic happen. But they do really need a reorganization thematically. Just something that allows all of these properties to coexist seamlessly. Even just to throw your hands up and be like, yeah, it is what it is. It's Disney's Disney. Just anything to make it not be California, because this simply doesn't make sense anymore. Until they change that, because listen, Coco's coming in, Avatar's coming in, two more Avengers campuses are coming in, Avengers campus attractions, I mean, they're coming in. We just gotta drop the California. It's fine, we gotta drop it. But until they own up to the fact that they have to drop it, which I'm sure they will, but until they do that, I gotta give it a 2. I have to give it a 2. It's my job to give it a 2 for vibes. And that's not to say anything is wrong with it. DCA is perfect. It's basically just, you know, going through its teenage years. It's just growing up, because there are parts of it that are beautiful. Oh, that area by Grand Californian. Ooh, that whole themed area. Fire. Radiator Springs. Delicious. Even whatever's going on in that, like, back corner of Paradise Gardens, whatever. It's a weird vibe, but it owns it. Each section is good, but together, it has a lot of holes. It's basically a slice of Swiss cheese. So I'm sorry, DCA, but nothing there makes sense, and I'm giving you a 2. You get a 2 because some of your areas are great. Again, Redwood Creek Challenge Trail, beautiful. You walk over there and you're like, ooh, breath of fresh air. But you walk in the other direction and you're like, what on earth is going on? They get a 2. I know you all know where I'm coming from, even if you don't agree. We are moving on to Disneyland, where, of course, we're at Disneyland. The vibes are immaculate. The sheer amount of live music, of roaming characters, of vehicles just farting around. There's so much going on here that I can't complain about anything. Disneyland Park feels more alive than a real place. Like, I live in Los Angeles and I walk down the street and a third of the storefronts I see are vacant. Like, and I live in West Hollywood. This is a busy, bustling area. Melrose, there's many empty storefronts. Here at Disneyland, it feels alive. It's bustling. It feels like a town square in a time before cell phones. It is a destination, I'd say, like any other, but it's better than any other. And I know you're thinking, girly, it's got nothing on the Magic Kingdom Hub. Hubgrass life. And while I get that and I see what you're saying, Disneyland's footprint, their hub being so small and so sweet, just sets up the rest of the park for success and adds to the storytelling that already exists throughout the different lands. Let me give you a perfect example. I was at Disneyland a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago at this point, maybe 3 weeks ago. I was there with my family. I was there with Pearl. And we were in Fantasyland. And it was hot out. And we were busy. And we were going from ride to ride. And out of nowhere, literally, out of nowhere, Elsa starts walking through the crowd, just waving hello to everyone. And she stops at my daughter. I think because my face was, because I couldn't believe that Pearl's favorite character of the moment was just walking towards us. And she walked up to Pearl and she talked to her. And she was like, oh, here's a snowflake. Oh, here's a snowball. I mean, imaginary, but still. And she had this interaction with her that was the one of the best interactions we had all day and probably ever with a character. And that was just Elsa walking through the park. So imagine what you can accomplish if you are visiting and trying to see characters. The vibes here are immaculate because Disneyland allows Disney characters to thrive within their park. There is so much music. There are bands. There are multiple bands. There's a marching band. There's the Pearly Band, which is not named after my child. That's what it's called. Like, I mean, not that it would be. I'm just saying it's not like something I call it. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. They have so much music. There's so many artists around. It's just, it is breathtaking how special it is and how that quaint little footprint sets you up for so much unexpected magic. You never know at Disneyland, you never know what is going to be around the next turn. And for that, I gotta give it a 5. But comparing this directly to Magic Kingdom is a bit tricky. I love Magic Kingdom. When I go to Disneyland, I don't go, oh, I'm home. But when I'm in Magic Kingdom, that's how I feel. Something about seeing that castle just makes me be like, oh, I'm at Disney. And I know it's really easy, very easy here to be hot, sweaty, tired, overwhelmed, stressed, because this is the big show. This is what so many people travel to Florida for. But Magic Kingdom is a pinch too big, a bit too unmanageable. It's the only park, also, that you can't get to directly by Uber or Lyft, but it's the Magic freaking Kingdom. You will suffer to find joy here. And the way I always see it is that you can visit Disney World, but you didn't really visit Disney World unless you come here. In a way, if you don't come here, it hasn't, it's just you haven't accomplished the full goal. Walking through a quiet Adventureland at night, Tomorrowland in the evening, even when it's chaotic, this place just delivers a mood time and time again. Even talking about it makes me miss it, and I'm probably going to be there in 48 hours. But while Magic Kingdom deserves a 5, it also doesn't. So it's not going to get it. It's going to get a 4. And here's why. Magic Kingdom is so, so special. But the highs are highs and the lows are low. It can be as magical as it is utterly frustrating. But at the end of the day, when it really comes down to it, they had the Muppets and they took them out. They had Muppets Live. They had puppeteers. They had the Muppets and they took them away. They took my Muppets away. So for that, they're getting dinged and Magic Kingdom's getting a 4 on vibes. My house, my rules. If you don't like it, put the Muppets back in there and then we're good to go. Epcot. Also, don't hold that Muppets thing against me in a moment because you easily can and I stand behind my feelings. I don't care if they're contradictory. Epcot vibes, pristine. No notes. Is what I would say if they didn't do my boy bad with the remodel on about half of the park. There is nowhere else I walk in and just see the fuel behind Disney nostalgia more than here. But there are parts of it that irk me. The concrete, the lack of shade, the changing of the fountain, the vibe in that hub feeling so off. And while it's not a terrible remodel by any means, it was needed. It was needed. Nobody wanted to go into Electric Umbrella in 2025, okay? The shop is good. Like, some of it is good. Some of it is really good. The Epcot, like, Spaceship Earth lighting package was worth the change alone. That, with the soundtrack, oh, a perfect night. And it does feel more open now, more expansive, more like a futuristic mall, which does fit the Epcot ethos. Even if we had to spend a year seeing Zach Ridley unnecessarily post about the flooring, we endured that and we got through. And in a way, I actually kind of like some of what they did, even if kind of a concrete metallic expanse in Florida is a nightmare. For the love of all things holy, put in some canopies, put in some shade. We are roasting out here. But just when I want to complain about no one wants to sit in the sun, this is bad, I don't like this, Journey of Water inspired by Moana, shockingly good, instant classic. That flex space they debuted for as an ideal indoor multi-kitchen setup for food festivals and just never used it as that. Now it's a rec room. Bad. Some of it bad, some of it good. And when you're in the World Showcase, it is heaven to walk through all of these immaculate little pavilions. But you add the crowds and the chaos of a festival and the highest concentration of drunk people at Disney World you will ever see. And it's not quite there. It's gonna get a good grade, but it's not valedictorian. So for all of that, I'm gonna give it a 4. And again, I do have to stand behind it. Some of the changes are not my favorite. When I walk into Epcot, I walk past Spaceship Earth, I'm a little like, really? We couldn't have made this like a comfier place? We couldn't have made this like a shade the whole walk? We don't have that. But when the sun sets, there is nothing better than the front of Epcot. And so for that, I give it a 4. Ooh, almost second to last but not least. We're talking vibes at Disney's Hollywood Studios. And the vibes at Disney's Hollywood Studios are bad. Dude, they're bad. They're bad. Which is why I'm giving it the lowest ranking possible. Like a man with a disconcerting amount of plastic surgery, they redid it and then they redid it again. How are we still living in a construction zone at Disney's Hollywood Studios? How is this happening? Didn't we just live through this? Nothing made sense. And then the construction was over. And now nothing makes sense again. And it possibly never will. Because Disney's Hollywood Studios is Disney's most disjointed theme park in existence. Cohesiveness got up, left the room, went in an Uber, took it to the airport, and is gone. We've got Monsters, Inc. We've got Muppets coming back. We got an oldie time Los Angeles restaurant. We have a black and white TV show themed ride that nobody under 60 remembers. We have a waterfront show at a waterfront you literally cannot see from any vantage point within the theme park. And we have Star Wars split between two locations, which, oh yeah, are painfully close to each other. They are so close that they could have been the same thing, but they're so far, so distinctively far, that it ruins the entire illusion. You cannot just call this place California. Same with DCA. You can't just call it all Hollywood and go, yeah, that works. Pack it up, boys. This place is the immersive experience equivalent of a ransom note. They have a Star Wars themed restaurant where you can't say the word coffee, and a lunchroom modeled after a Disney employee cafeteria where, hypothetically, someone working on marketing for those films would eat lunch. They have Betty White's handprints. They have an Olaf meet and greet. Nothing here makes sense. Now, is the vibe so chaotic at Disney's Hollywood Studios it's good? No! No, it's not! See earlier note about endless construction. I applaud its chaos. I will reevaluate it when the new areas, there's Muppets gonna be 3. There's gonna be so many new areas. I will reevaluate it in the future when it is different. But while I have to applaud its chaos, I give it a goose egg 0 on the vibe scale. It earned it. It's not my fault. Don't come for me. I mean, you can call in on the Churros hotline and let me know how you feel, but I stand behind it. It's got a big ol' 0. I mean, there's like an Indiana Jones stunt show, and then also like that alley that they made Pixar themed. Like, why? Like, Edna Mode exists in the same world as Steven Tyler. It doesn't make any sense. Why are we okay with this? Oh my God. Last but not least, we are bringing it back up. We are feeling joy again because we are talking about Disney's Animal Kingdom. And when it comes to vibes at Disney's Animal Kingdom, obviously 5. Everywhere you look at this park, there's either art or something living that you can't see in another theme park. That's it. Give it a 5. The fact that there are multiple walking paths filled with the most beautiful foliage and animal surprises you've ever seen, it would give it a 5 alone. But Animal Kingdom, at its core, I think is the most Disney of parks. Because Disney as a company isn't just IP. It's not just the characters and films and stories you love brought to life. Animal Kingdom, to me, is one of the truest examples of what the brand really stands for. This identity that we've seen become tested more and more, more often than ever before, with recent events and probably future ones if we want to be grim and realistic about it. And yes, Magic Kingdom is kind of the Disney blueprint based off Disneyland. That's what we think of when we think of a Disney theme park. And Epcot plays off new technologies and global cultures so well. But Disney's Hollywood Studios does nothing. But Disney's Animal Kingdom is the truest example of Disney's prowess in themed entertainment by way of excellence. This is like the missing piece for why Disney is like no other company on earth. And real Disney heads know that we can never take that for granted. The detail, immersion, layout, live entertainment program, all of it is done at such a high level here at Animal Kingdom. But them having this real world undercurrent with these places and attractions really rooted in reality gives it a depth that themed locations can't always have. And while Epcot does have some of that, when you add in the animal factor, when you add in the weight and importance of conservation while also entertaining guests, there is perhaps no clearer example of Disney's prowess and excellence when it comes to themed entertainment. Animal Kingdom is getting fives across the board. I don't know if you're as bad at math as I am, but we're done with the rankings and it is time to determine which theme park is best, which theme park is worst, and which fall in the middle. We'll go bottom to top here with no surprise. In sixth place, we've got Disney's Hollywood Studios. I'll go here for a cup of cheese. I'll go here for a themed lunch if one of my friends want to go there. But I'll go here for the Joffrey's by Tower of Terror because that's fun. I'll go here to walk around because sometimes the vibe is okay. But I'm not walking back to the right or back to the left if I don't have to. Yikes. Coming in sixth place, 6.5 to Disney's Hollywood Studios. Remember, the top score is a 15, so that's pretty crummy. In fifth place, we have, Disney California Adventure. That got a 4 for food, a 2.5 for rides, and a 2 for vibes. That's 2 points more than Disney's Hollywood Studios got, which I should have said sooner. They had a 3 for food, a 3.5 for rides, and a 0 for vibes. In fourth place, let me make sure I didn't goof on this. No, in fourth place, we have Magic Kingdom, lower than I would have anticipated, with a total score of 11. They got 2 for food, which really dragged them down because rides were 5 and vibes were 4. If they just had, I don't know, food I wanted to eat, that's really all it would take. Their total score was in 11. Again, last place was Disney's Hollywood Studios with 6.5. Next was DCA with 8.5. And Magic Kingdom was 11. We are halfway through. In third place, we have, didn't expect that from the words I just said. In third place, we have Disney's Animal Kingdom with 12 points. And I'll tell you, fourth place, third place, second place, really tight race. 1 point between all of them. But third place goes to Animal Kingdom. 3.5 for food, 3.5 for rides, 5 for vibes. If they can just get one TikTok trending food that all of us want to eat, and when they open the Encanto area, I feel like that is going to skyrocket towards the top. In second place, 1 point more than Animal Kingdom. Again, Magic Kingdom had 11, Animal Kingdom had 12, but it's 13. It's my girl Epcot. A 5 for food, a 4 for rides, and a 4 for vibes. A nearly perfect score. And I think extremely accurate. That feels really good. That feels really good. Second place to Epcot feels really good. But first place, with a shockingly perfect score, considering that this is not my favorite theme park, I guess it is. It is absolutely the best one, as determined by this scientific poll. With 5 points for food, 5 points for ride, and 5 points for vibes. Fives across the board. Disneyland Park has clocked a perfect score. To say it from top to bottom, in case you don't follow information auditorily as well as not as poorly as I do, that's what I meant to say. I didn't mean to project. I can't take in information and remember it when people say it out loud. So just to count it back from first place to last. First place, Disneyland. Shocking. Second place, Epcot. Yeah, that feels good. Third place, Animal Kingdom. Fourth place, Magic Kingdom. Thought it would have been higher, but I guess there's nowhere for it to go. Fifth place, Disney California Adventure. And last place, deservedly, Disney's Hollywood Studios. That is our ranking of parks. If you want to see more of these episodes, call into the Churros Hotline. Let me know what you want me to rank. I really love putting these together, even if, listen, like, I know people at the company are going to hear this, and I'm really scared for people who worked on Hollywood Studios to text me or to text each other and to be like, oh boy. If I insulted anyone, I apologize, but listen, it's a gauntlet here on Veering Amusing, and I got to really compare stuff. If you agree, call in. If you don't agree, please call in. I am not always right. I am right about giving Hollywood Studios a zero. I guess they do have really good neon signs. Ooh, they do have good neon signs. But here is the thing. Even if I give them a point for vibes just for the neon signs, they are still in dead last. They're still in dead last. Yeah, so that's where I'm at. Let me know what you think. Let me know if I'm right or wrong. Let me know if you have any input that I should have included. As you know, I omitted nighttime entertainment because I just really wanted to stick to the rhyming. I also just wanted to stick to like the stuff, like not as much entertainment. I tossed it in a little here, some shows we referenced, but I really wanted to stick to like the physical rides. So I hope you enjoyed. I need to go because I have to wake up to go on an airplane. This was so much fun. Wow. Oh, if you like Hollywood Studios, I'm really sorry. And it's been really nice having you as a listener. And I hope you come back, even if you hate me now. Okay. Love you. Bye. It is our magical discount fairy, Becky, back with more.
I'm back. And this time I have a brand new one that just hit the wires not too long ago. How do you feel about Aulani? The tropical breezes, the cocktails with little umbrellas.
The Duffy. The Duffy is what you got to be leading with.
Why did I not even think to go there for you? I guess I need to like cue up. I'm thinking cocktails. You're thinking stuffed bears. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So they've just dropped a brand new offer to save up to 25% on stays 5 or more nights, or to save 20% on stays for up to 4 consecutive nights. This is for select rooms and villas if you go between January 4th, 2026, all the way to April 9th, 2026.
Becky, I got 4 words for you. Goofy by a pool. Goofy by a pool. That's all I need. That's all I need to be happy on vacation.
Got it. So I know where we're going next. Okay. I've got a couple others, though, really quickly, because Adventures by Disney is not being left behind. They still have a couple of great offers, too. If you book by December 31st of this year, you can save up to $400 per person off select international land or even their river cruise departures, which are amazing, which means England and France or Greece or Italy or South Africa. All of those are kind of up for these $400 per person off.
Ooh.
So if you have had your fill of Disney parks this year and you want to go try something else but still have that wonderful, amazing Disney brand backing you on your vacation, and Adventures by Disney is a great option.
And I do know you got one little magic trick in your back pocket. I know you got one more.
I have one little exclusive offer, which is only available through MEI Travel. And this one is Royal Caribbean Cruises. If you book a qualifying cruise by September 30th this year for travel all the way through 2026 in a balcony or suite, we'll give you a free soda package for 2 guests.
As you know, as I keep saying, the only reason I went on a Royal Caribbean sailing is because you told me to, because I will do what you say, because you are always right, and your track record is perfect.
And we had the best time on that ship, didn't we?
We really did. Like, I thought I would have fun. I did not think I would be actively wanting to rebook it. So I had a blast, and it really changed my perspective on the cruise line. Becky, thank you so much for coming on and telling us all about these many, many ways to save money with MEI Travel and MassFan Travel.
Thanks for having me on, and I'm going to start queuing up what we're going to talk about next time.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Carly. This is Josh from Fullerton, California. Question for you. I'm an LA native, or Southern California native, perhaps, more accurately, and I've spent my life going to Disneyland maybe once a year, and I've enjoyed it. But I always shunned off getting an annual pass because I couldn't justify the price. I just felt it was way too high, and on principle, I couldn't pay it. But now my gorgeous wife and beautiful daughter have finally broken me down, and we are magic key holders, and I find myself to be a Disney dad. We're having fun with it so far. My question to you, though, is what are some tips and tricks, perhaps your most treasured, most valuable, hard-learned lessons that you think a new magic key holder should know? As I said, I've gone to Disney at least once a year for at least, you know, 30-plus years, so I know a lot, but what are the most precious, most hard-earned tips and tricks that you think would fast-track our enjoyment of our passes? Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Hi! Welcome to the Magic Key Club. I am so happy to steer you in the right direction on this new journey, and also I gotta hand it to you. Gorgeous wife, beautiful daughter, we love to hear it. Now, I really thought about it, and I was like, oh, I've got to have a list of go-to tips or tricks, but I realized it's more so advice from what I've learned as being a Magic Key holder or annual pass holder for a number of years now. And I think the biggest thing, the number one thing that you should keep in mind is that your mentality towards these theme parks is going to change completely. There is no reason to go for the entire day anymore. You can come and go as you please. Sometimes it's nice to just go for 3 hours because you really can get a lot done in 3 hours. So I recommend kind of lowering the, the threshold of what you want to accomplish in a day. Because remember, you can always come back, and you can come back pretty easily, as long as you make reservations in advance and plan that out. Because you used to not have to do that, and I'm still bitter about it, and we're just gonna keep on moving through. Now, what I recommend for you on your perhaps your first trip as a Magic Key holder, or maybe one of the first times you go, is that I want to recommend that you try something that's new to you every time, when you can, when it's possible. Try to see something you haven't seen before. Stop to look at a shop window you haven't admired before. Go into places that you wouldn't have typically spent time at when you were really focused on the rides, the shows, the parades. Pull all that away and really from the ground up, try to enjoy Disneyland as this place in your community, because that's kind of what it is now, now that you have somewhat unfettered access to it. Try doing a day maybe where you have a goal of one ride, one thing to eat, and one thing that's new to you. Just maybe use that structure and plan a day throughout that, and have that flexibility and kind of going in with that light of an itinerary really opens you up to, oh, what's this over there? Oh, there's a character there. There's so much spontaneity at Disneyland, specifically Disneyland Park, that I think it lends itself to a totally different experience than what you're used to. Also, you're about to get obsessed with seasonal food. Just let it happen, because now you can be. You don't have to focus on Dole Whip. Like, there's so many other things that you as a local can easily get now. And as a local, I'm gonna take the L. I'm gonna openly admit it. I don't know geography, but you mentioned that you live in Fullerton. And if I mapped from the correct Fullerton, I'm pretty sure you live really close to Disneyland, like real, real close. And my recommendation for you specifically is to, whenever possible, whenever it works for you, I don't know if your Magic Key includes parking or not, but I would recommend taking an Uber or a Lyft from your place to Disneyland. Because currently the Uber drop-off is right by the front gate of Disneyland, and I predict that it's not going to be there forever. It's pretty jammed, it's pretty chaotic, it's not as uniformed as like the newer Disney parking experiences, and I just feel like that when the changes happen, because I don't know what the actual timetable is, eventually that is probably going to go away. So utilize it while you can. You can be door-to-door so quickly since you live so close. Also, it's probably going to cost about the same if you are paying for parking. If you have parking included with your pass, parking becomes a drag. I don't know what it is, but something about knowing you have this quote-unquote free access to the parks and being like, oh, it's going to take half an hour to park and get out and walk, it does kind of bum me out. So I really want to emphasize, if you do have free parking with your Magic Key, use Pixar Pal's parking garage before 11 a.m. It's like closed later in the day. I don't quite know why, but alas, it is so much quicker. You can look online for how to access it. It is a little tricky. And if you have discounted parking at the Toy Story lot, I think people take the bus or they walk and they think the walk is kind of a drag, which it is if it's hot out. But I personally like the walk from the Toy Story lot because you pass by two different drugstores. So if you want to pick up a snack, a water bottle, it is so much more cost effective to do that on the way into the park than it is if you are parking in the garage. Also, if you walk a tiny bit farther, there is a McDonald's, and coming into the park with an ice cold Diet Coke saves a few bucks and is quite a nice experience. But generally, just you now have the ability and the gift to treat it like the mall. So go for dinner. Go for a ride. Go late at night if there's, you know, a random reservation available. Just feel good about going casually and not really having any expectations. And definitely, definitely focus on the little things. That is my peak advice, because that is time you wouldn't have taken otherwise. And just going and wandering is the true magic of Disneyland Park. I hope you have so much fun. Enjoy. Life is a magic key holder. Oh, and one more quick thing. It is more beneficial for you to have reservations on days you think you might go and cancel them if a few days, a week out, you think you're not going to make it, than to not make any reservations and be like, oh, I want to go in 2 days and not be able to make anything. I find it to be better to have something on the calendar, and that way I usually can plan my life around it so that I can commit to that date, because doing it the opposite way, just waiting until a free day pops up and then trying to schedule, can be complicated. So just make sure you always have reservations in play and you have your next visit scheduled. You can always change it, but just to keep that in mind. Okay? Oh my gosh. Have so much fun. Okay, bye. That's our show! I don't know why I just did it in a Kermit-y voice, but it just kind of happened. Thank you all so much for listening and truly for all of your help with putting this show together. I was supposed to do a different episode this week, as I mentioned, and your suggestions not only propelled me through, but also gave me so many good ideas for episodes to do in 2026. So I thank you, I appreciate you, and I adore you. You can rate, review, and follow Very Amusing on Apple Podcasts, and rate and follow us on Spotify. You can leave comments there. Spotify also now has transcripts and little chapter breaks, which I think is so rad. It does that automatically. I think I can do it manually, but honestly, I'm like barely functioning in my brain right now, so it's automatic and it's pretty cool. I recommend you check it out. And also, if you've never rated us or reviewed us, we'll happily take it. It really helps people find out about the podcast, and I'm so grateful for everyone who has already done it. You can give us a call. It's 747-CHURROS. We love to receive your calls. They've been so fun lately, and I've been loving the calls we're getting. There's a few that I'm looking forward to sharing in upcoming episodes, so stay tuned. But again, no question, query, issue, problem, complaint, praise is too small or too big. Keep them coming at 747-CHURROS. If you are thinking about booking any sort of trip to Disney World, Disneyland Resort, on a cruise, Disney Cruise Line, Royal Caribbean, Epic Universe, any of that, please reach out to our travel partners at MEI Mouse Fan Travel. They will help you with all of your planning needs. They will make sure you get whatever discount is happening at that moment. They will try to snap up the lowest rate and the best offer for you. It's really like a virtual personal assistant, except they're a real person and you don't pay them. They do so much work for you. So I guess it's like a free personal travel assistant. And they're so helpful. And it's amazing. I truly like travel agents. Y'all are the best. I am so grateful to be working with them. MEI Mouse Fan Travel is making the Amusapalooza trip happen. I couldn't have done it without them. And I am forever indebted to them because of it. They are the best. Please head to mousefantravel.com/amusing for all of your travel needs. And even if you're like, I'm thinking about maybe wanting to go to Disneyland for a couple days, maybe interested in a Disney cruise, I heard there's discounts, they will price it all out for you. And it is so easy. It is so easy. And that way you can kind of have the data and look at it yourself and judge if you want to go on a trip or not. You can follow me at Carly Wiesel throughout the internet. And you can join the Fomaly at facebook.com/groups/Carly Wiesel. Subscribe to my Instagram. It is a measly, meager 99 cents a month. And I know that 99 cents a month is not nothing. But I feel like I'm always on this podcast talking about coffee prices. But it is less than cold foam. It's like one cold foam a month. And I think I could bring more joy than cold foam. Well, not in general, but maybe one serving of it, at least that, maybe. Anyway, 99 cents a month if you subscribe on my Instagram. It's fun. After every trip, I do a private Q&A. I'm posting like every 24 to 48 hours on there. I'm pretty active, and I always give a sneak peek as to what is ahead. So check that out. I would love to have you join that little community. Thanks so much for listening. See you real soon.
Mom, I'm so tired. You know what? I'm like 10 times your age. Stay awake. You know how I figure? I don't have that much longer. Maybe 20, maybe 25. I'm going to live every minute to the fullest.
I
don't want to hear I'm tired.
I know. Hi from Orlando.
Hi.
I'm with my mom. At 9 o'clock, I was like, I got to go to bed. And then we went to Disney Springs and then we stayed out and now it's 12:15. And I was like, oh, right. That thing I was like excited to record when we were wide awake. We are recording it now. So I apologize if I sound very monotone, but it was a fun night. It was worth it. I got new pants. I ate Gideon's. We're going to talk about it later. You'll hear about it next week. But this week's podcast, Mom.
Yeah.
I am ranking the 6 Disney parks in America. And I want to know what you would rank those parks at. So remember, there's Disneyland. Mm-hmm. There's the other one that's not Disneyland, which I don't even know if you've been to.
What the heck is that?
California Adventure?
No. Is that where they had like those water park things?
What?
When you were little, we took you like a...
No, we didn't go there when I was little.
I have no idea.
This one has Cars Land. Have you gone with Pearl to Cars Land?
No, I have not.
No. Okay, so you haven't done that.
So take that out of the mix.
We'll rank it right to the bottom, number 6. So then there's Magic.
Well, that's not fair. If I haven't been there, I might like it.
No.
So let's just do a rank out of 5. Forget the 6th.
Okay, fine. Okay. We have Magic Kingdom, Epcot.
Mm-hmm.
You know which ones those are.
Yeah.
Hollywood Studios.
Yes.
Do you know which one that one is?
Yeah, we just went there last time. Yeah, a month and a half ago. If I don't remember, put me in an old people's home with Alzheimer.
Okay, you never know. Okay, and then the other one is Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, I've been there too.
Okay, so those plus Disneyland.
Okay, my top one is Orlando Disney World.
Mom!
What?
I thought it would be superfluous to name every park before we did this, but clearly, Mom, yeah, okay. All 4 parks is Disney World. Disney World is like the city.
Well, we're here now in Disney World.
Oh my God, but there's individual parks at Disney World. That's why we just named all of them. We literally walked through all 5 parks, and then you said Disney World.
God, same again.
Which, okay, Magic Kingdom.
Magic Kingdom, that's what I meant.
Okay, Magic Kingdom
Magic
is...
Magic Kingdom's 1.
It was 1.
Disneyland is 2.
Disneyland is number 2?
Yeah, I love
before
it.
Epcot? Before you get your little maple popcorn and go in your little soaring?
Oh, maple popcorn. Okay, let's go back. Go back. Let's remix this. Definitely Magic Kingdom 1.
Okay.
Epcot 2.
Okay.
Disneyland 3.
Okay.
What was the 4th one?
Then the other 2 are Hollywood Studios
Hollywood
and Animal Kingdom.
Hollywood, give or take. It's nice, it's fun, but I go, there's no Muppets, I don't need to go anywhere. That's what we ran to, the theater and the water fountain.
She knew, I feel like
I'm... Rizzio's.
Rizzo's. It's like on a cruise when people do the Newlywed Game. My mom got it 100% correct. That is why we don't like Disney's Hollywood Studios. They are bringing Muppets back in a roller coaster, though, so you'll
it's
never
not the
see
same.
It. You'll never see it.
It's not when you go through the halls and you look at the pin, then you see them talking.
Yeah.
No, it's not the same.
So is that your bottom? Is that your
It's going to have to be my bottom.
Wow.
And Animal Kingdom, I like the birds that fly around.
I thought you were scared of birds.
Well, they fly around you. I'm videotaping. It's fine.
But you're
they
scared
come
of
by
it.
Me, I'm scared of them. But if they come by you, I'm fine with that. And that big, tall neck
Kevin,
thing.
Kevin. Yeah. The big, tall neck thing. I should have let you keep going. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Unanimously, this house hates Disney's Hollywood Studios. Look at that.
I just have nothing to go there for. Watch Marilyn Monroe drive down in a car in a Cadillac. I don't really care.
I agree. A little park's not great.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to sleep.
That was it?
That was it.
That was like 2 seconds.
Yeah, I already recorded the whole podcast. This is instead of your voicemail because we didn't have an episode last week.
Well, I have to leave. Well, once we play this, I'm going to still need a voicemail.
Yeah. Wow. I guess that's kind of a snake eating its own tail.
Yeah.
But, well, that's a problem for future me. Love you.
I love you too. See you soon.